Now, Mr. Staley, can you tell me who worked on the restoration besides yourself?
Well, the person that I would give the most credit for that worked for the city of Portland was our carpenter foreman, Don King. And Don was a craftsman. He was a supervisor. The Bureau of Parks had about a 15-man carpentry crew that not only did restoration in all the different buildings that the Park Bureau owned, but maintained about 150 comfort stations and park shelters and facilities and swimming pools. And Don was unique in that he had a he had real estate of his own, had worked many years in the construction business, and was a real craftsman. And in his crew were other people that had the skills necessary to make a restoration on a building like the Pittock Mansion. Don was also a very demanding person and demanded quality and the level of skill in a building that that precluded anybody going in and doing a second-rate job. So all the work that I was ever familiar with, the restoration and the particularly when we were repairing the building from the storm damage after the city purchased it, was directly, you could directly attribute it to Don King. Leroy Stratton did the necessary wiring and the restoration of the wiring on the building. Was responsible for making the building meet all code requirements. Irv Thorson did a lot of research and design on the landscape. He was the city landscape architect at that time. I think it would be fair to say that Dale Christensen was one of the, who was later on park superintendent, was one of the spark plugs behind the city taking over, helping sell council on acquiring the property, and then the city taking over responsibility for operating and maintaining it. And then subsequent to that, he supported very strongly the operation and maintenance division putting resources into the building, because in some instances there wasn't direct money budgeted for the building, and we used our regular maintenance force to supplement the restoration process. And again, I think Mary Alice Sneed was probably the key to the real restoration, because after she was hired, there was a committee set up.
Oh, the Pittock Mansion,
Advisory Committee was set up, and Mary Alice worked closely with them and in developing the master plan. I think they did an excellent job, because there were really not that many resources available, and every year we did a little bit that meshed with a total master plan. Again, Mary Alice, along with Don King, would not accept mediocre or second-rate work, and so we always, whenever we did anything to the building, it was always high-quality restoration work. Mm-hmm. The Park Bureau generally supported what we did in the building. The people that I've outlined were probably those in the city that were most responsible for putting together a quality job. But I think we all had a commitment just year after year of going up there and trying to accomplish as much as we could with the resources that we had. We had a plan that the building was shut down, I think it was the month of January, and there was a list developed by Mary Alice of maintenance work that needed to be done, and then we all worked together to accomplish some of the restoration on the building. And over a period of years, it turned into what you see today. And it needed a firm hand at the tiller, and Mary Alice did that. And I think in the Park Bureau, we were generous and creative in allocating, you know, resources. Because when you have a whole park system to take care of, the Pittock Mansion is just one, it's just one more park.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally had, you know, because I was in on it from the start, I always felt a strong commitment for the building, and of course I'm a sucker for renovation. I like to do that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So personally, I tried to put as many of our resources into it as I could. And then the building itself just speaks for itself. You know, it's a handsome building, and it's awe-inspiring. One time in 1959, when I was working as a surveyor, I was surveying a property line that was that went right across the Pittock Mansion itself, and I remember walking up a hill and seeing that mansion for the first time. I was about 300 or 400 feet away from it, and I was completely overwhelmed, and that feeling I don't think has ever left me.
I believe the Pittock Mansion was one of the first major restorations in Portland, not only in size, but also probably in terms of actually doing a restoration. Did you ever have that sense when you were doing it, that this is a new venture?
Yes. Everybody that was connected with it, there was never any doubt that we wanted to restore the building. The only things that we didn't restore, the only areas were the comfort stations, which we were required by
mm-hmm.
and exiting systems.
Code. Mm-hmm.
And I felt uncomfortable about those because they weren't strict restoration, but just about everything else in the building. But everybody that I met, particularly the Pittock Advisory Committee, was adamant that the building should be restored correctly, and no expense should be spared to do it right. And again, we were lucky in that, like with the roof, we were able to find a replacement for the tile. On the light fixtures, we were able to find the original designer. On many other things like that, we were able to find pieces or parts that somebody had or heard about.
Did they bring them to you, people?
Yes, and again, Mary Alice Sneed would have a better feel for that. But people bought old pieces of furniture back, and people bought things that were supposed to belong to the building. Again, like the old landscaping plan, the stories about the high step that you go into that side door on that was there because the car at the time had high wheels on it, and that was where the running board was, and stories like that. But I think the overall commitment to the restoration at some point has to go to Mary Alice Sneed again, because once she was appointed, why, she gave the general direction to everyone. But I think the Park Bureau itself did a good job in not trying to cut corners. And a lot of times when you have a lot of commitments and a limited amount of resources, there's a tendency to cut corners. And there might have been corners cut, but I don't remember that any were. And we also were lucky to recruit people to live up in the gatehouse. Do you want to talk about the gatehouse?
Oh, in a minute. I got another question for you. Was there a historical architect working with you at all during the restoration? Alex Pierce?
Yes, Alex Pierce. And he dealt mostly with, again, with Mary Alice Sneed, who then worked with us being the City of Portland, the Operation and Maintenance Division. I might add that a lot of the work that was done in the Pittock Mansion was done by city employees and not contracted out
mm-hmm.
like we often do, although many things were contracted out. if we had the resources and the people, we did it in-house.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of painting, we did a lot of refinishing of different parts of the house with our own painters. We did a lot of our own plumbing, we did a lot of our own electrical work, we did a lot of carpentry work. Landscaping was done entirely by city employees. And we had tree crews that spent a great deal of time up there getting rid of the downed timber and
mm-hmm.
trimming the ones that were broken but still usable. So you can't imagine the amount of work. I don't know. I would guess that there were 50 trees that were broken or knocked down one way or other. We went in and actually ground the stumps down into the ground so that you can't even tell if they were there anymore.
Oh, amazing.
It was really a major project.
How long did it take from the time you began work until the mansion was able to be opened to the public? Do you have any idea?
It was probably in a couple of years was open to the public, as I remember it now, which would probably been around 67. But every year after that, we were doing something to improve the building, even though we might just take one room and replace the wallpaper, repaint it. Another quick aside, I remember another thing I just wanted to mention, and I keep forgetting these things. As I was walking through the building, there were different things that would just amaze me, and I talked about the electrical panel. But I also remember, and this is one of the first times I went through it, on the second floor going through one of the suites of rooms. It's now a closet right across from a child's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cedar closet. And I remember opening that closet, it was like it was brand new. You know, the smell of cedar just overwhelmed me, and it probably hadn't been open for years, or certainly hadn't been open very much. And that's still there, you know. And so apparently they built those closets in those days so that they would give linen the fragrance of cedar. But it was it was just like a real surprise opening that door.
It has a lot of interesting features about it, I must say.
Another time why I stayed up there for a week in the apartment is when they had when we first opened it, they had a grand opening, and one of the jewelry stores downtown had like $100,000 worth of priceless silver in the house itself. And people, while I was there that week, somebody tried to get in to the house, and they they took some of our hose and they somehow hooked it on the concrete railing on the balcony on the second floor, and then they were trying to pull themselves up, and instead they pulled the part of the balcony down on top of it.
Oh,
and there was blood and the the hose there the next morning, and I didn't hear that, but that had kind of got me a little spooked up that there were people up there and they knew about that silver. So I was inspecting I'd go through the building every night. I was only up there about 10 nights, but I went through. It was kind of scary up there all by yourself, you know. And so this one night, I went all through the house and I would start at the top and come right down to the bottom, and I was going through the basement all by myself. And it's, you know, it's a big old, it's better now, but it was kind of lonely, and there was no furniture or anything in the house, and you could drop a pin and it would echo through the house. And so I walked through the basement area, and I came around through those doorways into where the furnace area is.
Mm-hmm.
And as I walked into the furnace room, there was a small light, probably a 10-20 watt bulb, way over in the corner. And as I walked into the room, just out of the corner of my eye, I saw this person with his axe up like this, like they were gonna put it on my head, and I just about had a heart attack. And what it was a statue, and they had put that statue down there. It was just as you walked past this corner, you just out of the corner of your eye, you saw this thing with a hatchet. And they had stored it down there. It was one of the most frightful things I ever saw. But anyway, it was just spooky. That
makes a nice story.
That's when it first opened up. And and I don't remember getting the date on that, but I remember that I was up there and stayed in that apartment for a week. When, well, they had the exhibit on like most of the summer, and so and several times somebody tried to get into the.
This was the exhibit with the designers, the interior designers.
Yes, that's right. The EIA. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So you could probably get a date through that.
Oh yeah, yeah, we have that. Well, I have a question. We talked about Park Bureau employees working on the restoration. You said they didn't really contract out very much. Were any volunteers utilized in the restoration at all, or were
there were, okay. And I can't. Again, Mr. Baker with the electrical fixtures and many other people, I just can't come up with names off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, again, Mary Alice Sneed would have all those people's names down there. They're probably in the archives up at Pittock Mansion, but Mary Alice very aggressively pursued and used the people's expertise on, well, particularly furniture and things like that to get period furniture into the building, and to replace different things. They did a lot of research into restoring all the bedrooms on the second floor, for example. Now on the main floor, the, I don't know what you call it, the front room, I guess, and the dining room,
parlor.
And the library,
parlor.
The parlor,
yeah.
The, mm-hmm. the oval, the egg shape. Mm-hmm. And they spent but they were in pretty good shape. The oval room we did some restoration on, but basically the dining room and the library, I don't recall that we did all that much restoration. There was certainly a little bit, but not very darn much. Of course, the kitchen had been redone, and there wasn't much you could do. How do you restore something that you don't even, and what was there they felt would be usable for caterers that would come in.
Mm-hmm.
And we did quite a little bit of work on the exterior, besides the exterior of the building, but we put a driveway down to the back of the building and some walkways around the building, and we opened up some stairs down to the gatehouse, and again, the landscaping, we spent a lot of time doing that.
What was the attitude of the city of Portland towards the mansion and its restoration? Well, first of all, maybe even we can go back further than that. Do you know what their attitude was about the acquisition and the effect that its acquisition would have on the city's parks budget?
At the time that the building was taken over, the City Council, as I remember it, was very supportive. They had limited funds available that they could put in to the purchase of the property. The fund drive that were taken at that time had to come up with, I'm going to say, matching funds. I'm not exactly sure how much the city put in and how much private put in, but it was pretty close to being equal, as I remember it. The Park Bureau was asked to provide a certain amount of support to the building. As far as the actual budgeting goes, I honestly don't know much about that, because at that time I was the Park Bureau engineer, and although I wasn't very close to the budget. Obviously, things like the restoration of the roof, some of the major things that were done had to be done by the budget process, by additional budget money. As far as the utilization of park employees on the restoration, there would usually be some flexibility in how you used your maintenance employees. In other words, you could defer some maintenance, and you know, in a perfect world you probably wouldn't do that, but at that time we were given instructions to particularly not so much the restoration, but certainly the stopping of further deterioration of the building.
Mm-hmm. So that would have been your major thrust at that
yeah,
time.
At that time, yeah. We brought our crews we could up there to fix the windows and just repair the roof as best we could. And I remember the garage where the apartment was smashed, we had to get that fixed right away. The drying out of the floors, we started that right away. Then we repaired the plaster work and a lot of that stuff. The real refined, some of the real refined restoration took years to do. It was kind of done on an ad hoc basis as we had the resources and the importance that the restoration, that particular part of the restoration was to the whole. It was kind of an ad hoc thing. And then again, like Mary Alice and the Cadaca Advisory Board had an overall policy that they set and asked for funds. One of the things that we just got done doing, and I think is of a little interest, is we researched the Portland building, excuse me, City Hall. And City Hall has the sandstone exterior like the Pittock Mansion does. And I know the city of Portland about 10 years ago steam cleaned and applied silicon to both City Hall, maybe 12 years ago, mm-hmm. City Hall and the Pittock Mansion. In our research now, we find out from Canada, Europe, and the U.S. Park Service that you probably do more damage to a building by putting that kind of a building, by putting silicone on, than by putting nothing on it. And so, we haven't. Mm-hmm. You can look at the exterior of both the City Hall and the Pittock Mansion, and there's no serious harm done. But right now, we're waiting further research in that area. I think it's just a nice little aside. Mm-hmm.
It is. Well, was there anyone who was specifically in charge of the whole restoration?
No.
Any one person?
Other than Mary Alice, mm-hmm. He was probably the key person behind it. When we first took it over, before Mary Alice came, Dale Christensen, who subsequently was superintendent of parks, was the coordinator, was the spark plug behind putting the project together and making sure it was done correctly and that it was funded. After Mary Alice came, about the same time I was promoted to Operation Maintenance Director, and that's when Mary Alice and I worked together very closely. She putting together the maintenance and any improvements that she wanted, again, usually during that 1 month period. So I would try to make my work schedule so that I could put as many personnel up there to help her as I could. And so I could, we got a lot done. And so you might, I suppose that after Dale kind of left, that it was Mary Alice and I at that stage, and the advisory committee, because they were invaluable. They gave us the public support that we needed to, you know, go ahead and do something. In the city, as a city worker, we have to be very sensitive on anything like the Pittock Mansion, because if we go in there and do something and somebody thinks it's wrong, we're public servants and we're really open to criticism. If we can work with somebody like the advisory committee, where we get the public to work with us and approve or request that we do it, it takes some of that onus of some public servant running wild off, and we're able to go ahead and do good work. And we were in that instance going through that system. And again, I think Mary Alice worked very closely with that committee and did a good job with us in that, you know, she worked with them and she let us know what we could do and what we couldn't do. So the guidelines came generally from the committee through Mary Alice to us, and so it was kind of a good, it was a teamwork.
Is there any way to ever know how much the total restoration cost was?
Absolutely impossible. you could probably spend $100,000 and get some rough idea, but that's all it would be. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think my last question should probably be around the Gate Lodge, and you called it the Gatehouse. It's been also called the Gate Lodge. Tell me about the restoration of the Gatehouse.
Well, when I left the Park Bureau for my present job as maintenance facilities manager for the city. I had obviously had a lot of experience with Park Bureau facilities, and a CETA project was formed where, under facilities management, where a number of city projects were submitted and subsequently approved. Also included were the restoration of the Kenton Fire Station, the old Kenton Fire Station. I don't know if you knew about that one. Mm-hmm. That was a nice project, and it's being used as a neighborhood facility right now. Some work up in the Washington Park Garden and the Pittock Gatehouse. We hired Alfred Staley. I say Alfred because I have to say that so he isn't confused with me. And he developed plans for the restoration that were approved by the Pittock Advisory Committee and Mary Alice Sneed. And we hired CETA employees for the restoration. Somewhere during the years from about 1964 to 1978, the 77-78, the water got into the walls of the Pittock Mansion and into the floors, and there was serious dry rot. In fact, some of the stairs were unusable. Some of the floors had actually sunk.
Do you mean the mansion, or do you mean the gatehouse? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so we literally had to tear out the entire, about two floors of the stairs, and the first, a good portion of the first and part of the second floors. There are four floors in the Pittock Gate Lodge. And working literally on a day-to-day basis, Al Staley would come up just about every day. Our CETA employees restored the house. For example, we had a fellow from, I believe it was from Chile or Argentina, that had been a carpenter there and was excellent at doing, could take a piece of wood and literally would hand carve it to fit a specific spot. And we used him to make a lot of these difficult replacement pieces of lumber for replacement, where a piece of where the thing had been hand fit years ago, and we replaced it exactly like it had been. I remember Al did a lot of research on the different paints. The paints that were used are exactly the paints that were used in 1914. They were dark and kind of dreary. The wooden floors, we replaced the wooden floors like they used to do them, and it's done entirely different than we do today. We installed a new furnace. We completely rewired. We brought in sprinklers and installed a new furnace for the building. It was literally completely rebuilt, all four floors. And it was rebuilt to historical landmark standard as set by Al Staley, the architect, and approved by the Pittock Advisory Committee. There were several plans at that time. One of them, the primary one, was to use the place as a tea house. And I understand that they're still thinking of one of these days using the building as a...
I believe they're going forward with that
permanent
very moment, yes. Uh-huh. Well, if